Hey, the meeting is called to order. 201. Okay, I am going to bypass the preamble since it doesn't look like we have anyone from the public here. Okay, with that, we have roll call.
Yes. Maria Deanna.
I'm here.
Donna Riley.
Here.
Gordon Ford.
Here.
Jason Gordo.
Here.
Mike Lynch.
Here.
Jim DeMartini.
Here.
Darren Garrett.
Here.
Michael O'Neill.
Here.
Joan Clendenin.
Here.
Jeff Grover. Absent. We have a call.
Thank you. Next item, our announcements.
I do have one announcement. I'd like to bring to the board's attention a consent item 5F. This approval type is very infrequent. This board does not provide a narrative on this particular item. We have a reciprocal member who's been awarded an industrial facility retirement from Kelton. Due to the member's service within that system, Kelton is paying a full 50% of the benefit. For us to be in compliance with Government Code 31838.5, we're asking the board to approve return of the member's cumulative contributions in the form of an annuity-only payment.
What does that mean exactly?
Okay, so the member has been awarded a disability through our reciprocal system, but because of his years of service, he's getting the full 50% benefit through PERS. Therefore, we are only having to administer back his accumulative contributions. So we're going to do that in the form of a lifetime annuity only benefit.
So only his contribution over what kind of period of time?
So the actuary, there's your guy right there who calculates that monthly amount.
Okay.
I can say exactly how long he's going to live.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is how long, you know, it'll...
It is based on life expectancy, mortality tables, and it does factor in survivor benefits.
Okay, so if he outlives the anticipated amount, then what? It ends?
And then there's a loss to the system.
So it continues to, with a loss to the system.
But it's a small amount. Okay. The amount's only $300 a month.
And how many years does he have with us?
That's terrible to talk about somebody's mortality.
He has very little. I think it's 5 or 6 years with us. It's the majority of the service was with PERS.
But it sounds like he's just getting his own money back.
Right.
That's essentially what it is.
Yeah. I think the reason Donna brought this up is because this hasn't happened in a long time. And it's on the agenda as consent, and there was no material for you to read. So she just wanted to explain to you, supposedly, the simplicity of this benefit.
So if he paid in $24,000, and over his payout period, he receives $24,000, did payments cease? Or does he continue to receive payment beyond what he contributed?
No, that's the thing. That's why it goes above and beyond. Say he lives 20 years more.
Right. That's the
then it continues.
It could at some point potentially be an actual loss for us, but we are assuming that the monies that he's been in the system and the annuity amount that's been calculated will cover his life expectancy with some factor.
But if Graham's pretty good at what he does, then we shouldn't get a gain or a loss.
I mean, Graham, do you get that granular that by member? You pick a death date for them? don't ask.
That's dreadful.
Hey, Graham, tell Jason how much longer you've got to live.
I mean, I have visited Death Clock recently.
Some of us would like to know that.
No, I know. Going from morbid to morbider. Anyways, okay, but it is a regulation, so it's the law. Okay, thank you, Donna. Any public comment? Okay, consent items, number 5. I believe we wanted
Madam
to pull...
Madam Chair, if I could, I'll need to pull 5C. So if we can pull 5C, approve the remainder of the consent calendar, and then I'll be recusing myself on 5C. Okay.
Is that a motion?
That is a motion.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Do you have any discussion?
So this will be to approve the consent calendar with the exception of 5C.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, so moved. So, recusing himself on 5C.
It should be noted on the record that I'm recusing myself, please.
So noted.
Now we get a good discussion on 5C.
Should we just decline it?
Don't.
Yeah!
A lot of paperwork.
Yeah, I vote we approve everything but 5C17.
He has a gun.
I move we approve 5C17.
Well done.
Okay. Is that a motion?
I move that we approve consent item 5C as written.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Discussion? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so moved. Okay, go down. There's a
lot
of...
You gonna let him know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, there's that.
It was enough.
Thank you.
You know, we considered it for a moment.
You're more or less official now, Darren.
I do.
Okay, 6A. Okay, you're on.
Thank you all. So you have a copy of the actuarial evaluation report.
Graham, you got to talk up.
I will, sorry. Actuarial evaluation report as of 6/30/2014. This is the second one of these I've done today. I was over at Marin this morning. Their report is 138 pages long. Ooh. So hopefully this will go a little faster. The results have changed only by, I think, 1 or 2 basis points since when I was last here. So the results are essentially unchanged from when we presented the initial evaluation results a couple months ago. Just want to turn your attention to a couple pages. If you look at pages 3 and 4, this really has a summary of all the results that we've been talking about. Bring it up on the screen, although I know it's probably impossible to see, but as you can see, the actuarial liability of the plan went up from about $1.9 billion to just over $2 billion as of 6/30/14. The assets increased from just over $1.5 billion to $1.64 billion. That's on the smooth value, right? So that only recognizes 20% of the gain for the current year. And the unfunded liability, even on a smooth basis, did go down from just under $400 million to about $380 million. So the funded ratio improved from just under 80% to just over 81%. Now remember, that's on a smooth basis. In terms of your financial statements now, we are going to be showing the funded ratio on the market value of assets. So whatever you have in the bank as of 6/30/14, if you turn your attention to page 4, we're actually showing that funded ratio on both bases. So you can see that the funded ratio has increased from 79.4% up to 87.5% due to the investment gains from July 1, 2013 to 6/30/14. So again, your financial statements are now going to be based on the market value of assets, so it will be more similar to this number. One thing to keep in mind, your GASB 67, 68 numbers aren't going to match up exactly with these, even though they're both using the market value of assets, because your financial statements use a liability number that's rolled forward from the prior valuation. The valuation that we show here are based on your actual members in the plan as of 6/30/14. So you may see a small difference from what you're showing in your GASB financials. Turning back to page 3, membership increased slightly. We did have a slightly higher active population. Number of retirees also increased by over 4%. That's normal as your plan matures. One thing to look at is that the ratio of the retired members to the number of actives continues to increase, and that's normal as the plan matures, especially as the baby boom is retiring. And then just the other real key result here is the net employer contribution rate is actually gone down a little bit from 24% to 23.35. Remember last year, you did not implement the full 24% contribution rate because you were phasing in over a 2-year period those changes to the actuarial cost method. If we turn to page 6, this shows the development of the contribution rates. And again, you saw this as part of the preliminary results, that the numbers only changed by about a basis point or two as we cleaned up a couple small data issues. The biggest contributor to the reduction in the contribution rate was the fact that you had a sizable asset gain, even on a smooth basis, that reduced the cost by about 0.8% of pay. The effective contribution rate did go up. Last year it was 22.94. It went up by about 1% of pay due to that second year of the phase-in of those actual costs. So that's the largest factor that you see. But the biggest thing that we didn't know was going to happen was that asset gain, right? That lowered the cost from what we had expected it to be last year. So again, the net employer contribution rate as of 6/30/14 is 23.35%. That's made up of three pieces: the employer's share of the normal costs, so the employer's share of the benefits that people are accruing this year, plus the amortization payment towards the unfunded liability, which is almost the same at this point. The two pieces are about the same. And then the expected administrative expenses for the plan, just under 0.9% of pay.
I read an article the other day about Merced County, and it said that their employee contribution rate was 44%. Are we talking about the same thing?
Yes.
So they're 45% more.
Their funded ratio is closer to 60%. Yours is getting close to 90%.
Wow.
So their amortization payment
60%
is much larger than. So really, we just covered really like the bulk of what I wanted to talk about in terms of the valuation results. On page 7, we do have a quick discussion of one risk measure, which is the ratio of assets to payroll. Currently, that's about 7.5. The ratio of assets to payroll, if you were fully funded, would be about 8.5. That's fairly typical for the 37X systems. That's actually roughly equivalent to the average. We've looked at that. What that tells you is if you have a given change in your asset level, what does that mean? How much have you gained or lost compared to payroll, right? So if your asset to payroll ratio is 7.5, let's say your assets lost 10%, they actually declined in value by 10% from one year to the next. That would be a 17.75% loss because you're assuming that you're going to earn 7.75, right? Based on that 7.5 ratio of assets to payroll, that means you would be losing about 130% of pay in terms of that asset change, right? And that has to be made up from one of two places, either excess investment returns or, barring that, additional contributions. If you took that loss and you amortized it over the current period that you're using, which is 22 years, that would be a loss in the vicinity of 9% of pay. Okay? Now, keep in mind that that 9% of pay, you would gradually recognize that over a 5-year period because of your assets. But over the period of the average amortization period, you're talking about a 9% of pay increase for that 1 year's asset loss of 10%, which really is almost an 18% loss compared to your assumption. Okay. So that's just one risk measure that talks about how volatile are your contributions over these longer period of time based on the size of your assets compared to the county and the district's payroll. Okay. Rick was there at a CalIPERS Administrators Institute session that the CEO of our company and I did last year, where we demonstrated this thing we're calling an actuarial risk dashboard. And it has a whole lot of risk measures in addition to the ones that are in this report. It's something I think at some point we might want to discuss with this board about getting maybe some different risk measures that get at what some of the actuarial risks of the plan are. But this is one that's recommended to be included in valuation reports now. Anything on to add to that?
The only thing I wanted to say was, because I know this is asked of me several times throughout the year, beginning with the year 15-16, which is the year that these rates will actually go into effect, the amortization period for the fund will be 21 years. It says 22 in this valuation, but that's based on June 30th, 2014.
Correct.
And then the other thing is that we actually have, I think I looked at it, about $130 million of assets that aren't being used in calculating the employer rate right now. And those are assets that are essentially saved away for a rainy day that are a byproduct of the actuarial smoothing that the actuary uses. So $130 million in the bank, so to speak.
And we'll see those actually in a couple pages, or the impact of those. pages 9 and 10 are historical trends that show what the fund ratio has done over the last several years and the contribution rates. And there's no surprises here, right? Big investment losses from 2008 to 2009 caused a decline in the asset value, increased the unfunded liability, and reduced the funded ratio. Since that time, the assets have recovered and are getting closer to the level of the liabilities. We do see some jumps in the liabilities, particularly when you have an experience study and you make changes to the assumptions. So again, I've given you kind of a preview too. We are doing an experience study next year. You know, there are questions about is inflation lower, are returns lower? There's probably going to be some changes to the mortality assumptions. All those things will probably result in, I would guess, an increase in liabilities just due to a review of the assumptions next year. Contribution trend on page 10, again, similar story. Investment losses from 2008 pushed up the contribution rates. You've also seen a steady or a smaller increase in the average employee contribution rate as assumptions have changed and as we've been hiring PEPFR members that are now paying half the normal cost of the plan. I'm going to look at page 12. Page 12 is where we see the impact of those deferred asset gains that are not yet reflected in the smooth value of assets, right? You can see this graph is showing the projection of the employer and the employee contribution rates over the next 20 years. This is based on our actuarial fantasy that we're going to earn exactly 7.75% each year. Right? Even if we earn that over a 20-year period on average, you're not going to earn exactly 7.75 each year. But this shows you the trend that would occur if all of our assumptions were met, including that I got exactly right when everybody was going to pass away.
In other words, it's a big if.
A big if.
It'll never be that picture.
It will not
ever.
That's the one thing we know it won't be.
One thing I can say with confidence is it will not be exactly like this. But you can see that the employer contribution rate, which is the top bar, is expected to decline over the next 5 years somewhat substantially as you recognize those investment gains that are not currently in the smooth value of assets. Now again, remember what I just said about we're doing an experience study, there will be assumption changes, so again, even if you did earn 7.75%, I can almost guarantee you that the picture will not look like this because of changes to our mortality assumptions and other items. But what it also shows you is that over time that contribution rate is expected to decline, then stay fairly stable. What you don't see in here, because we're only showing 20 years and the amortization period is still 22 coming down to 21, after the end of this graph you would see if all of our assumptions are met, you would see a pretty big decline in the contribution rate because the current unfunded liability would be paid off and the amortization payment would go away. And in essence, you would probably end up with a contribution rate very similar to the employee's contribution rate, because at that time you'll have mostly PEPFR members, so both sides would be paying about half the normal cost if you were back to fully funded. Okay. Page 13 shows a similar projection, but it's showing the assets compared to the liabilities, and just shows you that as this unfunded liability is paid down, your funded ratio, which is shown along the top of the graph, is expected to climb back to 100%, right, assuming your assumptions are met. The rest of this report just contains the details of the calculations, right? So section 2 has our exhibits about the assets. We show what the market value of assets are. These exhibits are straight out of your financial statements. We show how the asset market value has changed from year to year. Again, those are from your financial statements. One thing that sometimes comes up if you look at page 17, we do have an approximate rate of return here, and there's sometimes questions about this because this frequently, well, almost always, will differ from what your investment advisor has said that you've, or your consultant has said you've earned in the last year. The number that we have here, and Rick can confirm this, we actuaries have this very simple equation, 2i over a plus b minus I, which basically is just this very approximate way we have of computing an investment return. It's based on an assumption that all cash flows occur exactly in the middle of the year, right? Your investment consultant is going to be using a more exact calculation. So that's why this number here will frequently be different from what your investment advisor has said you earned in the last year.
Another thing, too, is that we have to siphon. We have good years. We have to siphon money off the valuation reserve to sticking to the non-valuation reserves because the board voted several years ago to keep that contingency reserve at a certain level.
Sure.
So that will depress that as well.
Well, not, it won't depress that one, but it will depress the one on page 19, which shows the calculation of the actuarial value of assets.
Oh, so you incorporate, yeah, you're right.
Right, I don't think the reserves affect your total market value. But again, Rick's correct, here we're showing the calculation of that smooth asset value. And then at the bottom of this page, what we're showing is here are some of the non-valuation reserves, right? So the assets that we're not including in our calculations, where we compare to your liabilities for calculating the unfunded liability. And the biggest one is that contingency reserve of about $15.3 million. We are excluding that from the asset value. So that truly is a rainy day fund that we are not incorporating in the asset value under the current board policy. One reserve has dropped off this list. We used to exclude the value of that $5,000 lump sum death benefit reserve, but based on the board's actions and our recommendations last year, both the liabilities for that benefit and the assets have been rolled into the regular valuation because those benefits are guaranteed.
So Graham, real quick, on 19, 14E, the contingency reserve, that 15.2 million,
yes,
that's going into this $130 million.
No, that's separate.
What is this?
This is, go ahead.
This is just money that is not included at all in the valuation assets and will not come into the valuation assets unless you have some losses, at which point if you didn't have enough investment earnings to credit the valuation reserve balances with the appropriate amount of interest, you could draw down this contingency reserve to credit those valuation reserves with interest.
So this is a safety net that's used before the side account.
So there's a government code section in the 1937 Act that allows retirement systems to siphon off money off the valuation reserves, essentially to save for a rainy day to cover future investment losses. And it has nothing to do with the contribution rate that Graham calculates or the smooth value of assets that he calculates.
Right, just the smooth value of assets, you know, any gain or loss, we're going to recognize 20% of that each year. We will not recognize this $15 million unless you actually draw that down, and that will generally only occur if you have investment losses that are large enough that you can't credit the necessary interest to your reserves.
Got it. Thank you.
Again, on page 20, this is showing historical investment performance, but when you look at especially the net return on the market value, these are based on our simplified calculations, so these numbers may look different from what you get from your investment consultant. Rest of the report, section 3, is just summarizing the liabilities for the different groups. It's breaking it up between general and safety. We're looking at the amounts for the county versus the special districts. We do something similar in section 4 when we look at the contribution rates. Because you have different contribution rates for general versus safety members and for the county versus series and special districts, we've shown those, and then we get even finer when you look at start pages 9, 29, and 30. We're actually breaking up the contribution rate into all of the different tiers. Okay. We've taken out a number of pages. We used to include a lot of the information that you needed for your financial statements under GASB 25 and 27 in this report. That is now, we've taken that information out. That's now included in your GASB 67, 68 report. So we did save a few trees there this year. There's only one table that's still in there. That's the GASB solvency test. And that's not required by GASB, but the GFOA likes to see that as part of your CAFR. The rest of the report is just a summary of the demographic information that we use, the assumptions and the methods that we use, and summaries of the employee contribution rate tables and the plan provisions that we use to value the benefits. So with that, I would like to accept any, if you have any questions on the valuation report, I'd be happy to address them. I also have some software that we brought with us. The first part of which really shows how those contributions, the contribution projections were determined. So you've seen something like this from me before, but now I think the formatting is a little different. What you're seeing is, here's that exact graph that we showed in the report, right? The contribution rate 23.4% this year, declining over the next 5 years as we smooth in those investment gains from this year and prior years. One thing that we can do here is that if you would like to see what happens to the contribution rates in a different scenario, like let's say we only earn what?
3%.
3%?
Pessimist.
God forbid.
That's what happened. So if we earn 3%, so this is, you can see in this column here is 7.75% every year. And here's the employer contribution rate. If I put in a 3% return for the the next fiscal year, you can see that the contribution rate does not decline as fast. There's no change to this year. And you can see the first year number drops increases from 22.1 to 22.6. So a 3% return would increase next year's contribution rate by about 0.5%. And then you see that the long term out here, instead of about a 16% contribution rate, you're looking at about a 19% contribution rate. So about a 3% of pay increase for that size of a loss. This is based on the current amortization policy for your plan, which is just a closed period of 22 years, right? One thing that would be kind of interesting if you kept with this type of policy is that if you had a loss, let's say out in 2030, let's say you only return zero then, the contribution rate would jump off the charts, right? Because what's happening is you're amortizing that loss over a very short period of time. We're assuming that 22-year period keeps coming down. So if you remember the last time I was here, I said at some point you're going to have to make a decision about what to do about future gains and losses. You can't just keep this single closed amortization period going forever, because at some point it'll be so short, 1 or 2 years, if you have a future loss, you know, you would have huge contribution rate changes. We do have the ability to model that. If we did something called layered amortization, where each year you have each year you set up a new amortization base for whatever changes happened in the unfunded liability that year, and you say, okay, whatever unfunded liability occurred this year, I'm going to pay that off over a 20-year period from now. Now you can see that if we had a loss of that size and we had the same and still a return of 0% out in the future, you can see that's a much smaller change in the contribution rate at that point in time. Okay, so that's probably the direction in which we would recommend that you go at some point, is to add this kind of layered amortization approach. That's a topic that I definitely want to discuss with the board, especially as we get into the experience study, in terms of how do you set up a funding policy that will be good not just for now but going forward.
You had mentioned there was some magical thing about 18 years.
18 years is sort of the cutoff where you have negative amortization.
Right.
Right, where if you're greater than 18 years and you have some kind of a loss, then your amortization payment, at least in the first year or two, will be less than the interest on the unfunded liability. So for that given base, you would expect to see the principal actually go up for 1 or 2 years before it starts to get paid off.
So it might be wise to be looking at that possibility if we go down to 18 years and then putting a policy in place?
Not necessarily. You could institute the new policy whenever you like. That current base is going to continue to come down by 1 year no matter what. So let's say you had an investment gain and you were amortizing that over a 20-year period on its own. In that case, you would actually see the, not unfunded, but the surplus associated with that base go up by a couple of years and then come back down, while your current unfunded liability might be down to 18 or 19 at that point and also be decreasing the unfunded liability in size. So I don't think you have to wait till the current unfunded liability gets to a certain place before you start talking about layered amortization going forward.
On wages, did you put in the actual contract or is it all 3.5?
This year we've gone through all of the what we used to call select and ultimate wage increases, where we had, you know, a long and significant pay freeze in place, and we built that directly in the cost calculations. We're at the point now where we're just assuming over the long term, the wage increases are going to be on average 3.5%. And if there are gains and losses in different years, that those will hopefully balance out.
Okay, so the first couple of years, we know we won't be at the 3.5, but it'll be average.
So you may get some small investment, you might get some small liability gains in those years. Remember, anytime we have a liability gain from salaries being lower than expected, you also generally see a higher amortization payment as a percentage of pay because you're amortizing that unfunded liability over a smaller payroll base.
And if we have a tick up in inflation, that's a negative impact to this as well?
It is, but it's not a big one because your COLAs are capped, right? Even if inflation goes way
up, yeah, if it goes to 10,
your benefits will only go up by 3%. In addition to that, you know, if you immediately gave 10% pay increases to everybody, yeah, that would be a liability loss. Generally would also tend to see bond returns higher as well. So some, you know, those things can sometimes move in the same direction.
What's our inflation assumption right now?
I believe it's 3.25%.
3.25%.
Yeah. Most plans have been moving down steadily, but slowly but steadily. You know, the investment markets, their assumptions changed pretty rapidly in terms of inflation. You know, they're down at the 2.25%, 2.5% range, and we're still not there yet, but kind of like at every experience study, I think a lot of public plans have been, you know, moving down by 0.25% each time. I had the first plan that I worked with that just dropped below 3% Marin this year. They did an experience study and they went from 3.25% to 2.75% for their inflation assumption.
How would rate of return?
Go ahead, sir.
How would increases in the workforce, I mean, what percentage of increase in the workforce have you calculated?
So this these projections assume a flat active workforce size, and basically that payroll will go up by about 3.5%, total payroll will go up by about 3.5% as you get, you know, these cost of living increases for general, for the active employees. The payroll base would stay the same size, but the average amount would go up, but the total amount would go up by 3% or 3.5% as you get sort of base salary increases.
Okay. But Darren, Jim, isn't there a likelihood, or isn't it already built in, that there's going to be some significant increases in safety? Because of
I saw that on the paper on the way over here from the Fox and Furkin, there was
because
on the front page that said
of realignment.
No, it said just additional hiring of safety officers.
Well, right. I thought they were talking 60-70 more people.
Well, she's right about the realignment. They have a new jail going in, and there's a mandated staffing. So many prisoners per guard. Garrett would know more about that than me, but so when that jail comes online, unless we reduce the prisoners in the downtown jail, the staffing is going to have to go up.
So the net impact of that in general is not necessarily your cost is made up of two pieces, right? Your normal cost, the benefits that people are earning this year, plus the payment towards the unfunded liability.
So
when you hire people, the normal cost goes up just because you have more people earning benefits, but it doesn't change the cost as a percentage of pay.
Okay.
When you hire new active employees, a new employee isn't bringing an unfunded liability into the system, so the unfunded liability stays the same. It's just going to be amortized over a larger payroll base. So the payment towards the unfunded liability doesn't go up. It's just going to be a smaller payment as a percentage of pay. So all things being equal, if you hire people, it will increase the dollar cost by the normal cost for those members, the value of the benefits they're earning, but it will reduce the contribution rate by the amount that the unfunded liability payment goes down just because it's being spread out over a larger payroll base.
Okay.
That makes sense?
Thank you.
Our new employees, especially in safety, are going to be significantly younger than
that's good.
County average.
Right. And they're going to be PEPR members as well. Right? So their normal costs will be lower than the normal cost for the members that they are replacing. So this is showing that, you know, the projection, and I'm gonna go back to, here's your current funding policy. I've got C in there for closed amortization period. And again, the amortization period is 22 years. Jason, I brought this to make your day.
My day.
Here's your day. Monte Carlo simulation.
I love it.
All right. So.
How many trials did we do?
How many do you want to do?
10,000.
Oh, okay.
How long are we gonna be here?
Let's see how fast it runs first with 1,000, okay?
1,000's adequate.
1,000's adequate, okay.
Thanks.
So what we're showing here is the plan sponsor's contribution rate, right? This is the employer contribution rate, and you can see this black line is the median, right? The 50th percentile for the contribution rates under our simulations. Here we're not assuming that you earn 7.75% each year. We are assuming a distribution of returns where the average return is 7.75% and a standard deviation of 14%. I believe that's pretty close to what SIS had.
It is. Historically, it's a little high, though, the standard deviation. I've been looking at that recently. It's more closer to around 12.5%, but that's good for
I think
for
that's,
today.
This is something I had pulled the last time SIS did asset liability study. Right. So 14% standard deviation and a 7.75% expected return, but again, we're going to have volatility. So what happens is, click this button, and it's just, so in the background, you can see to the top right, it's running through these scenarios. It's simulating the returns on your investment portfolio, and then what it's generating is a distribution of the contribution rates. So this is the worst, you know, kind of exhibit for a colorblind person to try to explain, but what we're seeing in these bars here are the percentile distributions, right? So these yellow in the middle, right? That is the distribution of contribution rates that are in the 40th to 60th percentile in each of these years, right? So the in year 2022, if I've done all of these simulations up to that point, the middle 40th to 60th percent of the contribution rates are occurring between, you know, 11 and 12% of pay and somewhere around 22% of pay. You can see that the black line, the 50th percentile, actually tracks fairly well with the pattern that we see in what we call the deterministic scenario, where you earn exactly 7.75 each year. So we are expecting to see a decline in the contribution rates as we do these simulations. Again, if you look at the red bars, this is sort of the 80th to the 95th percentile, right? So it's not the worst of the worst, but it's sort of the 4/5 worst returns. What happens in terms of the contribution rates? This might look a little scary, right? In that 15 years from now, you're looking at a contribution rate anywhere from 0 to 71% of pay. Well, the reason that the spread is this large is because I'm still modeling that single closed amortization period. So if you get gains or losses out here in the final years, it causes very wide ranges in the contribution rates. One thing to also remember is that any individual trial is not going to sit within one of these bands. I have to remember back when we started, for those of you here, when we started as actuaries, we showed this projection called the spaghetti graph. Mm-hmm. Bob McCrory came and we had this, you know, lots of strands of spaghetti jumping all over the place. Well, basically, this is taking those strands of spaghetti and just, you know, condensing them into different areas. But each individual trial will bounce around between these, right? Any individual history will look like we've had so far, right? You have some periods of really good returns and periods of really bad returns. So that's important to keep in mind. One thing we can do here, so I'm going to copy this to the, I'm going to save this. So this is now I'm showing you two different scenarios, and they are identical at this point. These colored bars are the ones that we just looked at, and then these are the same ones. What happens if we say, okay, going forward, we're going to look at this layered amortization approach, where every year's gain or loss will be amortized over its own 20-year period, so you avoid that problem of, you know, 15 years from now, you've got a really short amortization period, and you're trying to pay off a large loss or a gain. So if we rerun this, under this layered amortization approach, what
should
you
be a lot
should
better.
See is it's going to be a lot tighter distribution of contribution rates. See, 10,000 would have been a lot. It would have been
here. But it would have been fun.
Okay, so the new, the reds and greens and yellows, this shows you how that distribution tightens significantly when we adopt some kind of a layered amortization approach going forward.
Isn't that just wise?
Yes.
Well, why wouldn't we do that?
It's almost inevitable.
The right. alternative approach would be to get that amortization period down to something more reasonable, something like a 12 to 15 year
yeah.
period, and then just start rolling it.
And just continue it.
And just, well, yeah. not necessarily continue it, just say, okay, every
no,
year
rolling
12
year periods.
Instead of.
Yeah. Now, that used to be something that we would have probably suggested. There have been changes in terms of the GASB accounting rules and in terms of actuarial standards that have kind of pushed people away from doing that. It's hard to do that if you do that, your GASB statements are going to have to reflect a lower discount rate because GASB makes you do this test that on a closed group basis, right, no new entrants to the plan, you run forward your liabilities and your assets and you see if your assets are expecting to cover your benefit payments. Well, if you have rolling amortization and you have a closed plan, if you have an unfunded liability, it means at some point in time you're going to be projected to run out of assets, right? Because you're continuing to roll forward that unfunded liability, and you end up failing this thing called the crossover test, which means you have to use a lower discount rate. So change, and you know, 4 or 5 years ago, I would have said, great, yeah, when we get down to 13, 14 years, let's just start rolling that amortization period. It's harder to do that now, given these other changes in dynamics. So more and more plans, I think almost every plan in the 37 Act systems at this point has adopted a layered amortization approach. Anything to add on that? We have the capacity to show not just the contribution rate under these things, but what happens to your funded ratios. So what's the distribution of your funded ratios over time?
How about return?
Look at investment return. Distribution of returns. I think this will be a good tool to look at going forward as we try to figure out what kind of a funding policy you would like to adopt. We've used this tool with other groups. This can help you figure out, you know, the actuarial standards say you should be amortizing somewhere between your gains and losses somewhere between 15 and 20 years. What are the trade-offs of those things? How much are we controlling volatility by using a longer amortization period as compared to a shorter amortization period? And what does that mean in terms of maybe a trade-off in the funded ratio, projected funded ratios? So I think, you know, I would recommend that we explore some of this tool, especially when we come back to talk about funding policy.
I'm so happy.
That makes me happy.
Thank you, Graham.
So with that, that's what I wanted to present to you today. Happy to answer any questions about the valuation report or the simulation tools that we've got before you.
Graham, on page 3, table 1-2, membership total, drawing attention to retired members first. Mm-hmm. So that went up 136. Year over year. Mm-hmm. Is that more or less than what you figured?
I believe we had a small spike in retirement.
I think there was a small retirement loss.
Which generally means
right.
more
than
retirees
expected.
Than expected.
Okay.
That was
which
because of
I
you,
thought.
Darren.
No doubt.
He's not in there yet.
No doubt. Yeah.
It's like,
yeah. And then the next. Table down, the one by itself, ratio of retired members to active members. So that went from 82.8 to 84.8. Where do you see that trending?
Higher.
So you see it going to parity almost, getting close to 1-to-1?
Well, partly that's going to depend on the issue of how many people are you adding to your active workforce.
Right.
If you had a stable active workforce, I would assume that it's probably going to approach parity. to the extent that you grow your active workforce, that may slow that trend down a little bit.
But if we keep trending up on our people going into retirement, it could stay even or outpace.
Correct. Now, that's to some extent over the long term, that's what we expect, in that we expect people are going to live longer and longer.
Right.
Right. So people are going to spend more years in retirement than, unless the retirement age also increases, you're going to have more and more retirees for each active person. That's not necessarily a bad thing, especially in a pension plan where you're pre-funding their benefits, right?
Right.
Hopefully by the time these people have retired, you will have set aside the assets to cover those benefits in retirement. The one thing that does change, though, is the higher your ratio of retired members to active members, it just means that the more volatile those contribution rates are going to be, because you've got a smaller relative payroll base over which to absorb gains and losses in the assets and your other experience.
So now throw PEPRA members in there, which are paying less.
Right, now that
one. And they're paying less towards a group who's going to be retiring with a higher multiplier.
So that will also, well, the thing is that the liability per PEPRA member is going to be lower than the current workforce.
Correct.
So PEPRA members in general are going to sort of counteract that effect of higher asset to payroll ratios.
And theoretically, PEPRA members may work longer too, because the
benefits
are not as good.
They may.
They're going to have to.
Well, they have to work
longer.
If they want
the same level of benefit.
Retire.
Well, we know they're not putting their own money.
I guess my
yeah, but
PEPRA members,
52 versus 50.
Right.
7.5%.
Yeah, but they're not putting their own money away in addition to that to supplement their benefit.
Perhaps.
But what if you have turnover of
this
group?
Is that ratio?
As long as they hire behind them.
Under the same
right.
terms.
It just depends on the hiring practices of the counties.
How long does a PEPRA member have to be on before they qualify for a benefit?
5 years. Now that's actually shorter than, right? Do you have 50 and 10 for your
10 membership?
10.
Five vested.
Right now for PEPRA, it's only 5.
Right.
For vested. All right.
So I guess, Graham, my end comment here is the overall maturation of the plan.
Overall, all of them being equal, we expect that it will continue to mature. Two things will slow that down in some ways. The first, which would affect this active to retired member, would just be increases in the active workforce.
Correct.
The other thing would be PEPRA, which will be not so much affecting that as much as it'll be affecting the asset to payroll ratio, which is sort of the other measure of plan maturity.
Are you seeing the same changes in other 37 Act counties?
Yes.
In
now
the
they're
ratio?
Not, you're not all starting from the same place. I have some plans that ratio is higher. It's closer to 100% already. But in general, the trend for public retirement plans has definitely been a larger number of retirees compared to the active workforce. That's not just public pension. That's like any social insurance system. Right? Social Security is saying mm-hmm. the same thing as well. And that's the baby boom.
Jason, did you ask or mention that maybe people could retire because they would be saving on their own for retirement?
Well, what I'm saying is that PEPRA members, the comment was made that they could work to get the same benefit that you're receiving and Darren's going to receive. They have to work later in life to get that same benefit.
They're never
and I'm saying if they put their own money away in a 401k or 457 plan or something of that nature, which they're not, well, most of them. Most employees are not contributing to their own, to fund their own retirement plan. If they wanted to supplement their income and retire earlier, they would have to do it with their own money.
I was wondering if we don't know, like the county has that deferred comp plan.
Yeah.
What percentage of payroll or what percentage of employees are
we don't?
Actually, we do.
That is public record.
But
Stan Sarah doesn't follow that.
We actually do have pretty broad participation in our plan, and
the 457.
In the 457, yeah. And it's very actively managed by the Deferred Compensation Committee.
Yeah.
Wow, that's great.
And they put out a lot of educational information, and they, you know, get members, you know, information out there to employees. There's a great deal of work that goes into encouraging employees to put additional funds aside in their 457.
That's great. I mean, I took advantage of it. It's nice.
Are the majority of funds still going into the conservative guaranteed amount?
Actually, they are.
Yeah.
Do we know if PIPRA folks are doing the 457 at the same ratio as
No, I don't think we have that level of detail. We don't have a ton of new 18 to 24-year-old employees. We just don't have, compared to our existing employees, we don't have a ton of new people coming in, but they are being encouraged in the benefits orientation to join. And we actually have somebody in the room who could address that if we wanted to open that up to public comment. Jody Hayes could probably tell us anything we wanted to know about it. So if that would be okay to have a public comment.
Thank you. I can just make a couple of brief comments. The county does have a very active 457 plan, and actually does have quite a bit of participation. Some employees have funds contributed to that plan as part of their standard benefit package, but surprisingly, when we did do some statistics, and we'd be happy to bring some statistics if the retirement board were interested, we actually had quite a few employees that were participating entirely on their own as well. So there's a lot of marketing that goes into that, and we've put a lot of new plan options, investment options in there that have kind of like smart retirement dates, so employees can just pick. We have easy forms for them now, and they say, okay, if I want to retire this year, just pick that fund, and it has a glide path of investment options and so forth.
Targeted.
It's pretty well dialed in for those folks, but I'll tell you that our deferred comp committee actually perceives to have a greater role in the overall retirement process in the future, because we think that, just as you were saying, and what prompted these questions, that deferred compensation will serve a greater role for this new generation of employees. We recognize.
If they want to have an actual retirement.
It depends on what their individual retirement goals are. And I think our mission, or what has really driven that committee in terms of managing this program, is to get employees to understand that they should be thinking about those things at a very young age. Everybody you know later in life that works on these things, they always say, oh, I wish I did this earlier. So somehow we have to get that message through. I guess what we need is social media or something. Maybe we need a Twitter account. But that's Twitter so old. I don't know. Whatever my kid's on right now, that's what we need.
Snapchat.
For the next 2 years.
That only lasts a second. Yeah.
Can I put next year's valuation on Snapchat so you can look at it?
We'll put it on Reddit.
On Instagram. All righty. Do we have any more discussion? Any more questions for Graham? Any more scenarios?
So we'll need a motion to approve the June 30th, 2014 actuarial evaluation as presented.
I move that we accept the June 30th, 2014 actuarial plan as presented.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Do we have any additional discussion?
I just want to comment that I really like this format. It's kind of new to me, the presentation, the way it's presented. It's
very interactive.
Yeah, very interactive. It seems to be easier to understand. I like the conciseness of it.
Well, I have one trustee in Merced told me that there's a company in Berkeley that now makes glasses that colorblind people can wear to see colors. Hopefully by next year, I'll have a pair of those, and the simulations will be much easier for us.
Are those the same? Gosh, never mind.
Not rose-colored glasses.
Merced ever said about something.
Have you ever accused me of having rose colored?
Yes, we do. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Yay. Motion is carried.
Thank you much.
Thanks, Graham.
Thank you. Executive Director, Ron.
Item 7A, this is the monthly staff report. This is an information item only, and I will turn this over to Ms. Herman.
Okay. On the investment RFP, we did post the RFP to the website on Friday. We're hopeful. We've advertised in the P&I. I've also noted we're already online. A couple other of the financial websites. I think
we're already. See you in Anaheim.
Yes. So I fully expect to have a good competitive process, and I just caution you all, we are in a quiet zone, so if any investment consultants, companies, or anything were to contact you, just send them over to our website and they can look it up there. All the communication about the RFP will be controlled, and any questions asked will be responded to all and posted on the website. So we have to be very, just caution you to send people to the website if you are contacted. A couple people, Maria and I, ran into at the conference this last week. The minute they realized, oh yeah, you've got an RFP, I can't talk to you, they just turned around and walked away friendly, but they don't want to jeopardize their standing anymore.
Yeah, they know the process.
What's the due date?
Typical that they
April 15th. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Nice. Is it typical that they contact board members? Or is that...
You just don't know who you're
sounds like
into.
Cheating to me.
Well, it would be cheating if they did that, yes.
Okay.
But I don't expect anybody to, but you never know who people may know. So I'm just cautioning that we are in a quiet period.
In the instance where I bumped into this gentleman at Calipers, it was just by chance.
Right. And
are
when
we're likely to run into some of these folks at Sackers?
Yes. Yes, and we will not be completely done by the time we get on. So yes, we could. But
when is Sackers?
Some of the older
May 12
for
social
reasons.
Joan, don't talk to anybody.
I
don't expect
May 12 to 15.
Joan, I expect no problems. I just cautioning everybody is all.
And out of an abundance of caution.
Got it. So yes, the proposals are due on April 15th. I figured that was tax day. It would be easy to remember.
Thank you.
Rick said I had a bad sense of humor. But,
yeah. April 10th for Gordon.
Everybody has a different idea.
Okay, next is we're transitioning certain services from, used to be, we called it the benefit side of our equation. It's the member services. The benefit staff not only were setting up retirees, doing all the counseling, making sure all the buybacks go and service purchases, but then they are also attempting to also put out the entire payroll. So they're still going to be doing all the setup. They're still going to be doing the balancing. They're still talking to our members. But we're now able, because we have two accountants on staff, we're going to start transitioning some of the processing part of it over to the accounting staff. It's a better separation of duties. It's something our auditors have been suggesting for a while. We've just not been staffed up to do it. So we're excited about it. We're preliminary stage. Jamie worked with Natalie this last payroll to teach her some of it, and so that's what we're working on. Eventually, processing of all funds out the door will be on the accounting side, and the member services staff will continue to do the excellent job that they do in helping us sort out why things are going on and who knows what. But that's a piece of our, that's a part of the plan, part of the strategic plan, and something the auditors have been asking us to do for a while. And the third piece of this is the data audit. We have Michelle Silva, who is a retired Inuit, working part-time. We also hired a temporary staff person to backfill another regular staff person to help with these audits. We are making true progress. Michelle, as project manager, determined that if we separated out people with the alternative schedules, our dispatchers, our firefighters, our probation officers, they work lots of really crazy schedules, and you're constantly having to go back and re-audit them and make them correct again and do this stuff. So rather than do those over and over again, we're going to pull them out and let's make some true progress and get through the rest of the group. So we are making progress on that. Michelle says she's up to the P's in the bulk of that, so for active and deferred members. So as we all know, we have to get this done in order to move forward with our pension software project that we're coming up on. And that's all I have. Did I miss something?
Nope, that's good. All right, 7B, this is discussion and action on the SACRS May 12th through 15th, 2015 Spring Conference voting proxy form. You guys all know what that means, and I will hand this one over to Kelly.
So we have a few people who have said that they expressed interest in going to SACRS, so we have enough people to have a voting delegate and an alternate. Just so you guys know, so far, Joan has expressed interest in going, Michael O'Neill will be going, and Jeff Grover will be going. Unless there's anyone else that would like to state today that they're going to be considered for the voting delegate, I have those three trustees that will be attending.
When is this going to be, the SACRS?
It is May 12th through the 15th.
And that's
in Anaheim?
Anaheim. Yeah, put me down to go.
Anybody want to volunteer to be the voting delegate out of those four?
It's got to be somebody who stays till the end.
That is true. This is for the business meeting on Friday.
Which generally starts about 11.
In true tradition,
generally starts about 11.
You can nominate the one who's not here, but
half the people disappear.
Right.
Yeah, it's never not here.
I'm a stayer.
Is that Grover?
I'll make a motion that Jeff Grover be our voting delegate. It is my last official.
Very good.
Do we need an alternate also, Kelly?
We do. We need an alternate.
If this is an action item, we have a motion. Do we need a second?
You want to fall back in case
true.
He doesn't want to do
it? Why don't we do both
it?
The first and the alternate in one motion?
Jeff Grover to be the primary voting delegate and Michael O'Neill to be the alternate. That's my motion.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Anyone else like to discuss it? Having said that, hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so moved.
All right. Anybody know what's going on with the contest for president?
Kind of, sort
okay,
of.
Okay, well, that's the next agenda item, so can we move into that right
yes.
now?
Sure.
All right. Go ahead, Kelly. Let me say one thing. This also is a discussion and action item, and the motion would be to either approve the nominating committee or the nominating committee that SACRS has proposed, or propose someone else yourself for inclusion.
Except for president.
What do you mean?
No, you're approving all the nominations on this list, or if you want someone else to be added to this, then you need to get them in there.
I get it.
If I could just comment on this, I did have a discussion. Apparently, there was a lot of commenting at Calipers regarding this. So there's some stuff going on. Anyways, but so there are actually a couple in most of these instances, two of these instances, where there are two names that have been submitted for. So we either have the option of, as a group, saying we're going to, as a group, vote for so-and-so and not so-and-so for president or not, and also for the secretary positions. We typically get a preset list of who is going to be presented.
Running.
Yes. Who's
that's
running.
That's what this is.
Yes. In this case, though, anyways.
You're not being asked
to
pick anybody today.
Yeah. What this is today is, and unlike before, there's all, like Maria said, there's always been, four. But what this is asking, does this group want to nominate anyone else? You have until March 25th to nominate anyone else to this.
Jeff Grover is in here.
Well, that would be my recommendation.
I love it.
To defer this until
nominate Grover again?
Just approved voting delegate has a chance to review the
second.
In the past, there hasn't been anyone from any other entity nominating them. So this is just to say that we don't have anyone else we're nominating. We validate this ballot.
Does this close off the possibility for some other group to nominate somebody?
No. Each 37 Act has a possibility to do that, and they all have board meetings on different days. So they have up until March.
So we could nominate Jeff Grover for Sacred President.
Yes, yes.
This board could.
Which would be good, I think.
He probably wouldn't be elected.
You are just full of mischief today.
It is.
But really, it's just a motion saying that we are either adding somebody to the nomination or we recognize it as it stands. Our next meeting, you will be voting. And it will look different than how we have voted in the past, as Maria stated. You know, we've usually just accepted all four people and voted as the ballot as one.
Yeah, well, it sounds like there's enough going on that we don't need to add to the mischief.
Unless you have a desire and a reason to add somebody to the arena.
One of the things that I think that SACRS has always had an issue with is getting people to actually want to run for these various positions. So I would, if somebody is interested, I would certainly say voluntarily throw your hat in. But I don't think there would be anything wrong with it, and anyone else, any organization has a right to submit a name.
This, as far as you know, is legitimate, though. It's not just a ploy to generate. This happened to me once. Someone came to me and said, we're trying to, you know, gin this thing up and get some interest in it, so we want you to run against me. And so I said, okay.
No, this is legitimate.
And
I mean,
then
it's...
I got elected.
So... enough people liked you, I guess. Nah.
One thing I know is that about a month ago, they put out their candidates, their four nominees for each position, and there was a system where they had several trustees says, you know what, we would like somebody else sitting in some of these seats, so this is who we propose. Right. Okay. And so that's why we are where we are, and that's why it's a little different than it's been in the past.
Okay. Just like this, when they took it to their board, someone did have someone that they wanted to, and so it started the ball rolling.
So, Michael, there's still time for you.
No, I was making a motion. Do we make? Do you need a motion to accept this slate of nominees?
Yes.
So moved.
Yeah. A motion and a second discussion.
Comment: the ratio of northern to southern California is way off.
Well, they consider Ventura kind of in the middle, although I beg to differ with myself, but anywho.
It's not too late.
That's reason for you to run.
To skew the,
no. I'm retired. I don't want to do anything more than I am now.
Okay. Any further discussion?
Who was
it? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion carried. We are there.
Standing committee.
Okay.
Sorry, I got to figure out a better way to do this.
Item 8, committee reports and recommendations for action. Today, the due diligence committee met on the 2015 due diligence schedule and also the RFP process for the investment consultant, and I don't know who is going to give it up. Donna.
So we met today, and we will be seeing five companies this year in early June for our due diligence, and we'll be meeting in May to go over our questions and prepare that. If you had any questions that you thought we should ask companies and, you know, specifically, you should share that with Rick so that he can include that in the list of questions that we take to the companies. Some burning question, you just need the information too. And then we also talked about the RFP, but of course Kathy already gave the update on that, so I think, I don't know if there's any other information besides what's already been presented that you need.
All right.
We will be bringing back, you know, the top two for the entire board.
So really fast, I'll just go through the process that we decided. We're going to meet, I believe, on the 20th of April 1st, and we are going to weed our candidate pool down to about four, we hope. And then we will meet again about a week or two later and weed that down to two finalists and decide whether we want to go on site and visit those finalists. And then we will bring those two finalists to the board for an interview, to the full board for an interview. So most of you are only going to see two final candidates at the very end while we weed through all the rest.
Can you bring us the name of the four?
Oh, yeah. We can do that.
How many candidates do you expect to have?
Well, we, based on what San Joaquin got and Fresno County got recently, they each got around eight, so we're anticipating we're going to get around eight as well. And like I said, hopefully we can do a first quick pass and get rid of three or four of them that just simply don't fit our criteria or our philosophy, and then we'll get down into the nuts and bolts as we weed that four down to two to bring before you folks probably sometime in June.
So I think Gordon would like to, would you like to see all eight names?
No.
Just the four names?
Well, I don't care if he presents the eight, fine, but I'd like to see at least the four that are considered respectable.
I think what we'll do is we'll just continue to feed you updates and you'll hear everything.
Just let us know what's going on.
Yeah.
Does that mean you have anything to add to that?
No. I didn't have anything to add to what Kathy said.
I'm glad there were.
Okay, that takes us to, do we have any items for closed session?
No.
Okay, that takes care of that. That takes us to the members forum. So I'll go ahead and start with Donna here.
Nothing for me.
Nothing for me. I have a question. Are questions permitted?
I think it depends on the question.
On the SACRS trustee database, mm-hmm. Can we just tell you that it's okay to put our, to submit our name and you can do
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I forgot to bring that up in announcements. I apologize. What we
and I meant to pull
I'm
this,
sorry.
And I couldn't remember why.
What we decided was, unless somebody pulled it and discussed it, that we were just going to give the approval to SACRS that we could include your names in a trustee database.
Yeah, fine. I don't have a problem
That's
with
what
that.
We figured.
Well, you know what? There was another commentary. I talk more than I usually do with this conference.
Listen, I think it's a worthy project that they're...
Now they're trying to promote more involvement on the trustees' part.
No, I think it's a good idea.
Well, except that there was a school of thought that all communications should go through the administrator of each system. So I don't have an opinion one way or the other.
Which is the way it is right now.
Yes.
Oh.
And I either forward you the email or I put the correspondence on consent.
Okay. And instead they will communicate directly with us.
Correct.
Possibly.
Correct.
Okay. That's fine.
But the only thing I would...
That's what I need is more email.
Well, that's... That could be potentially part of the system. Let me back up just a little bit. Commentary is that there was an opinion that it could be by being able to contact each trustee individually, it could be politicized. So that would be the only concern.
Well, if you didn't like it, you could unsubscribe.
We have the power to do that.
But in a way, it's politicized now. It's simply because it goes through me first. So I'm a filter, and I can, and I don't do this, but one could decide sure. whether to hand off that information or not.
You wouldn't.
I wouldn't.
You should all go through Jim.
Well,
how about Jeff Grover?
Jeff's not here.
All right.
I'll second that.
Other than that, I have nothing. Your turn.
Nothing.
I would like to see this board give a presentation to the Board of Supervisors on how well we're doing.
That'd be a good idea.
Soon. I think we've had a good year, and there was interest on the board of having a presentation summarizing our funding ratio.
It's planned for either the last meeting in March or the first one in April. I can't remember.
Second to the last meeting.
You've got it scheduled
already. Neither
so in a couple weeks.
You're already on the schedule.
Neither Mike or I are going to be here at the next meeting.
So in a couple weeks, Jim.
At the evening meeting?
I think so, yeah.
I've got nothing to do. I'll show up.
You can make public comment on how well the board's doing.
Absolutely.
Well, I'll sit in the cheap
seats.
Or I can
sit in the back and heckle. You know.
Okay, Mike.
Are they gonna use in this database for Sackers, are they looking for our personal email or?
Whatever email you wanna make public.
Okay, that's it, thanks.
Make mine my county email.
That's what I would do.
You keep flip-flopping.
Pardon?
At CalPERS, the chief operating officer for CalPERS, for California Public Employee Retirement System gave a presentation on your investment compliance program. After the session, I talked to him about our involvement with payday loans, and he said that CalPERS would not be in that position. They have a section on do's and don'ts, and they wouldn't allow that kind of.
Was that part of their bylaws?
Gord, was that part of the bylaws?
No.
No, it was just, it's just a do's and.
It was just a comment I talked to.
No, no, I mean, is it like, are there do's and don'ts part of their bylaws, or is it like a separate piece of paper?
I haven't been able to find it. He said I'm supposed to look at the web and take a look at it. So if you want to, that's fine. I'm just starting to get a feel of the reaction from other people.
In your spare time.
Just interesting. I'd be interested in what their do's and don'ts are.
Right. I also talked to the guy from Fresno, and he said he wouldn't allow his retirement board to be into it. No treasurer should allow the retirement board to be into stuff. I could take that as an insult to me.
Not necessarily.
You've been clear on your stance.
I'll be clear on my stance. That's definite, and I'll continue. Take it away, Darren.
Darren, this is your chance.
It is, most definitely. No, I just want to say that, as you know, this is my last official board meeting, and I will be coming off the retirement board effective upon my retirement. Which will be just shy of 12 years on the retirement board. Every one of those years has been exciting. Every one of those years has been rewarding from the standpoint that I have learned a lot. I have gained a lot of relationships with all of the trustees and staff. And I would just like to add that you know, none of that tenure has ever been about me. It's always been about working together and with staff and trustees and all of our member agencies in overcoming a lot of the obstacles that we've seen over that 12-year period. Everything that I've done in county service, which is over 26 years now, this has been the most rewarding because of just the complexity of what we deal with and the dynamics involved, the human element. So of all of my assignments, I will miss this one the most from that standpoint, but more importantly, I will miss the relationships and the people that have touched my life. You know, I will stay in touch, no doubt. There's always the opportunity maybe to come back in whatever capacity, because I do love this. Some of you may not want that. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway.
Sackers needs a president.
But no, it's been a fantastic journey. And, you know, I'm not a big reader of poetry, but I would just end by saying that I guess I would say my life has been like if you know Tennyson, and if you know Ulysses, if you read the last passage of Ulysses from Tennyson, that kind of explains where I'm coming from. So that's all I have, and thank you all very much.
I'm gonna read it.
Yeah, Fred knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Well, this is my favorite police chief. And I think that his presence at these meetings with a gun has probably been a good thing, and I don't know how we're going to make that up, Rick, but I want to thank you, Aaron, for your guidance and your education of being on all of this stuff. You've been a great man. I will see you many times.
You will. Thank you, Mike.
John?
A
would like you all to stick around for some time after the meeting where we are going to toast and maybe even roast Darren here.
With non-alcoholic beverages, I know that.
So please, stick around.
But as still the longest serving member of this board, I'm going to miss you. You know, we've been together through a bunch of things, so it's been lots of challenges in the last 12 plus years. So definitely going to miss you, having you here. I think you bring some clarity, and you're very clear in your beliefs and opinions, which I think is a good thing. So it'll be hard to replace you, but you're going to be missed. So thank you for everything you've done.
Thank you, Maria.
Okay, with that, we are formally adjourned.